The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast.
Dr. Taz. Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. Today we have joining us Dr. Frank Lyons. He is a practicing gastroenterologist in Tacoma, Washington. He has been a clinical researcher, a writer, and a teacher for over a quarter of a century. A fellow of the American College of Gastroenterology and the American College of Physicians, he's answered many clinical questions through his scientific investigations. He's also penned two books, Dealing with Nutritional Function, 42 Days to a New Life, and Fructose Exposed. Welcome, Dr. Lyons.
Thank you very much, Dr. Taz.
Well, I'm happy to have you on. You know, I deal a lot in practice with digestive health and dysfunctions of digestive health. I had a book in 2014 called The 21-Day Belly Fix that talked a lot about the microbiome, but I know that you've dug into this issue probably much, much more deeply than I have. So I am happy to have you on to kind of learn from your vast clinical and scientific experience as to, you know, what is, where we are in the field of gastroenterology, where we need to be, and what you've experienced. So tell us just a little bit about your background and what brought you to now focusing on nutrition, which, again, referring to many gastroenterologists around the city and around the country, not everybody is dialed into that conversation yet.
Well, it's very fun from my perspective because I have been a clinical gastroenterologist with a research background. I actually have a master's degree in microbiology and immunology before I became an MD. And with that, I have always approached patients from an academic as well as a clinical mindset. And if you've watched the transition of what's happening in gastrointestinal diseases, we have seen an explosion of fatty liver disease and metabolic syndrome, esophageal reflux disease, and inflammatory bowel disease. We've seen literally hundreds of millions of people now affected, and it's taken over my practice that these patients just come flooding into the door, and their first question is always, what medicine should I be taking? And my approach has totally changed over the last 25 years. Rather than putting them on more and more medicines, how can I reverse their physiology to get them off medicine?
Which is fantastic. So what is the, you know, in your practice, what are some of the biggest bloopers, I think, that you're seeing that lead to some of these GI issues or GI diseases?
Well, number one is we've been looking at carbohydrates incorrectly. We've always looked at fast carbs or slow carbs. We've looked at glycemic index. We've looked at all ways to look at carbohydrates other than how they are actually processed through the body. And once I figured that out, that we have digestible sugars and fermentable sugars, it became very clear how to start counseling patients.
Okay, so I really want to dive into that because I think that is the biggest source of confusion for everyone. And then, of course, with all the different fad diets out there, I think everybody really starts tripping over fructose and sucrose and glucose and what's fermentable and what's not. So when the concept of carbohydrates enters the picture, what is the right thing to do? What are good carbs versus bad carbs? How many carbs do we need to be eating? What's going on there? Is there a way to sift through that for us a little bit? Because you just nailed it when you said that there are different types, and that's where we all get confused.
Correct. And even trying to explain this to physicians, I have to take them back to the foundational way that the gut works. When we take in sugars, I'll just use that term for carbohydrates because it's, people know what sugars are and they don't always know what carbohydrates are. They can either be absorbed in the small intestine where they then get processed in the liver. And let's call that digestible sugars.
Mm-hmm.
If we take in too many digestible sugars, they create a change in our metabolism. And if you look at fructose is the one sugar that turns on a metabolic pathway in the liver that then creates metabolic syndrome. As you've read with Wheat Belly and Grain Brain and some of these other fabulous books, once that metabolic pathway is turned on, the rest of the digestible, meaning the absorbable sugars, going through the small intestine into the liver, follow suit. And so that's how we end up with both centralized obesity, which is metabolic syndrome, and peripheral obesity, which is what makes us not be able to get into our genes. And both create... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're on... Finish that, and then I have a question right behind that.
Okay. Now, if let's say you had totally normal metabolism going on right this moment, mm-hmm. and the only thing that you ate every day were potatoes, that's pure glucose. That's pure digestible glucose, like your blood sugar. That goes out into the peripheral bloodstream and gives you total body fat. Fructose, fruit sugar, alters that metabolic pathway if taken in excess on a daily basis. That then turns on a pathway in the liver that now creates a new metabolism where that sugar is converted to fat. And fat storage leads to centralized fat in that metabolic pathway. That then in turn leads to metabolic syndrome. And once that pathway is turned on, it now shunts all digestible sugars coming in, back to your potato sugar, into that centralized fat as well. And so all the modern diets do is have us decrease our caloric intake. They don't shut off that metabolic pathway. And so they all work. Yeah, they're all working while you're on it, but you can't get, it's kind of like a pebble in the door. If you don't take the pebble out, you can't close the door. And the frustrating thing is that it only takes 6 days to activate this pathway, which is a cruise ship for a week in Hawaii or whatever, and you come back and you've got the metabolic syndrome turned on. It takes about 2 weeks.
Okay, wait, we have to make sure everybody heard that, because there's a huge mindset that I think I have too, unfortunately, that we could go on a great vacation or a weekend away or indulge in, you know, a trip to Napa Valley and have a ton of wine and come back and be super clean and everything's going to be okay. But what you just said is that even 24 to 48 hours of that type of behavior is enough to switch on this metabolic switch, correct?
No, it takes 6 days. And the fact that if you go to my website, I have an article posted on there where they took 26-year-old healthy young men and monitored the metabolism as they put them on a 25-gram fructose load a day, which is one apple a day. Mm-hmm. And in 6 days, 100% of them had the metabolic syndrome switched on. Now, some people can be as quick as 2 days. And in some kids that are very active or who are rapidly growing, it takes longer. And that's why it doesn't affect every one of us the same. But for the average healthy adult person who is through their maturation process, it only takes about a week, and 100% of us will have metabolic syndrome turned on.
My goodness, 1 week, that's a vacation week. So what are the biggest sources? I can see my patients and my listeners are like, no, how do we master this? So what do you think, you know, thinking now, if a load of fructose is capable of doing that, then I, as a doctor for my patients, want some specifics, and I'm sure the listeners want some guidelines. What do you think the highest food sources of fructose are? I think that would be my first question. My second question would be, is there a safe number if we start counting fructose grams or grams of some of these, you know, carbohydrates? Is there a number to stay below where we can prevent this from happening?
That is wonderful science that I've written about in my second and third book. And it took a long time to dig this out, because you would hope that this would be in the nutrition textbook or the medical textbook, but it is not. And in fact, what it takes is, this is a guideline now, but I'll just say the first thing is the high number of grams that we find in our diet. Number one is honey. Honey has the highest dose of fructose of all of our foods. The second is fruit. Fructose means fruit, sugar. And so you have fruit juices, honey, table sugar, and high fructose corn syrup products. Table sugar is 50% fructose. High fructose corn syrup, like in a soda pop, is 55% mm-hmm. fructose. Apples, melons, and other fruits. A banana, for example, has 8 grams of fructose in it. And now the second question is, how much can you safely take in on a daily basis and not activate right. the system? Well, again, that's only been found through doing studies that actually average for a group of people. But for women, it's about 8 to 10 grams a day. For a woman, or for a man, it's about 15 to 20 grams a day. And why is that different? Is because muscles can convert fructose to glucose. And so if you have bigger muscle mass, you're going to be able to tolerate just a little bit more. But as you can see, one banana a day is about the limit of fructose that you can take in safely. Yeah, and let me give you a quick insight about the numbers. In 1960, the Western diet was about 10 grams of fructose per day on average. Today, that's 85 grams of fructose per day.
So where's that shift? Like, what did we introduce that made us go from 10 to 85?
Well, to give you a few examples, a sugar beet used to contain 1.5% sugar, and that has now been hybridized up to 20% sugar. And this year's foodie food at the restaurant is beets. So a lot of people are really into beets this year, and they're getting mm-hmm. way too much fructose in those beets. Likewise, if you look at the size of a watermelon or a strawberry or other fruit, they've been hybridized. When I was a kid, and I think I'm significantly older than you are, but when I was a kid, we only had two types of apples, Granny Smith and Macintosh apples, and they were about the size of a tangerine today, and they were very low sugar. They were very tart, very crisp tasting. Likewise, if you look at the old blueberries of the 1950s, and I have patients who have some of those, they're just like wild huckleberries, very mm-hmm. low to sugar. But they're now the size of a blackberry or a cherry, and they're dripping with sugar because they've been hybridized to get more sugar in them. And it's not genetically changing them. It's just been breeding them selectively so that they get higher sugar contents. And so our Western diet had a dramatic increase in the amount of sugar exposure that has led to this metabolic disaster.
Oh my gosh, this is really depressing. I'll just let you know. But my question is this happening around the world, or is this an American issue with the way we have industrialized food over the last, 40, 50 years, or is this a worldwide phenomenon? What do you think?
It's actually, when you study this on a global scale, it is spreading to other countries. And in fact, as you know, obesity and metabolism alteration is not one thing, it's several things. And a size of a meal, for example, calorically, a burger has gone from about, an entire burger meal from 1970 to today has almost doubled in size. If you've ever mm-hmm. been to In-N-Out Burger in California, they still serve the same size burger as back in the 60s. And we look at that thing today and we go, oh my gosh, that's pretty small. And yet if we eat it, it fills us up. But we've become so used to eating so many more calories on top of this change in metabolism that's created this absolute mess.
Well, I know you have a book, The Lion's Lifestyle, which I would love to talk about. But, my first question is, what's the solution? What's your advice? I'm assuming it's in the book. But what are the key points you think when we're trying to navigate, this fructose issue that we are naturally now exposed to, even when sometimes we might be consciously trying to make better choices and at the same time prevent this metabolic switch from turning on? What do you think some of the key things are that we could all be doing?
Well, number one is to get the metabolic switch turned off. And that's the hardest hurdle that I have to work very diligently with my patients. It's about a 3-week process where they have to fast from all digestible sugars. which basically means no fruits, no vegetables, no grains for 3 weeks to get that metabolism shut off. Once it's shut off, then they can go back to the diet of their choice, so long as they don't reactivate that. And so what I've taught them is pick one day a week, which is your treat day. And interestingly, I was just reading an article the other day that shows this colony or this community in Italy, where their whole community has taken on this policy of only having one day a week of sweets. And that one day a week has led to massive longevity because of that. But I actually have several things that need to be done in order to not only get this part of it stopped. You've got to eliminate trans fat. You've got to reduce your vegetable oil intake, which are the inflammatory omega-6 oils. You've got to get omega-3 fat into your diet. Why? Because omega-3 diet is, we are a deficient society for omega-3s, and they're essential fat. So I'm no trans fat. Get your threes up, get your sixes down, shut off fructose metabolism, reduce your total intake of wheat and grains in general, because they're just loaded with too much sugar, especially the GMO-based wheat and grains. And then monitor and exercise. And I'll tell you one quick thing. Just a few months ago now, the FDA has finally approved a blood test that we can monitor omega-3 and omega-6 levels. And so I get that on all my patients now, because I can actually tell them, you've got to take more fish oil, you've got to get rid of more vegetable oil to get that in balance. That's a long answer.
Wow. So, you know, that's a lot of information right there. And I know there's more information in your book, The Lion's Lifestyle. You know, when I'm listening to this, there are a couple of things that are going through my mind. You know, would that then make a ketogenic diet the right diet to move forward with if someone's looking for more structure? Automatically sort of takes out a lot of the sugars and the fructose and things like that. I'm curious to know.
Well, I can tell you, I have a chapter in my book on all the modern diets and compare them and how you stay healthy. Because I know that there are a lot of people who really love vegetarian diets and vegan diets and things like that, paleo diets, et cetera. And frankly, my wife and I love the ketogenic diet, but we also know that other people have their favorite diets. And so I just give advice on how you can navigate through those diets and still stay metabolically healthy. Because some people have a lot of different reasons why they choose different diets, and I get that. But I also know that virtually any diet that's not a ketogenic type of diet is going to get too much sugar in your diet. And so you have to be very cautious. And I also tell patients that, you know, two or three times a year, go through a fructose fast. When they get back from their cruise ship, when they get back from the Christmas vacation holiday time, when they've consumed a lot of sugars, after the fruit season in the summer, et cetera, shut it back off. And that way you get right back on the wagon, so to speak.
Wow, this is fascinating information. How surprised I am, but how surprised my patients may be, or listeners may be. And I know the next question. I can see you guys, listeners. Your next question is, prove that this really applies to me. Are there certain things we should be testing in practice? Like, should I be checking a fructose level or this omega-3, omega-6 index, which we do to a certain extent, but we don't do it automatically?
Well, because I see
top
so
markers.
Many patients. Yeah, I see so many patients with fatty liver. I follow their liver enzymes. I follow their lipid profile. I follow their hemoglobin A1C levels. I also monitor their omega-3 and omega-6 check levels, et cetera. And then you have to monitor their blood pressure and their blood sugar to make sure that they're, as they shut this all down, that their blood pressure comes down, their blood sugars. A lot of patients have to start coming off their medicines because they've now started to correct their metabolism that was creating all this problem in the first place. And the average patient that I work with comes off about 5 medications over about a 6-month period.
Wow, that is amazing results. And I know for so many people that are struggling with our core medical issues, hypercholesterolemia, cardiac disease, you know, all the mental health components. And then for many women, it's just weight. They're worried about their weight. It's been incredibly valuable information that I'm excited to bring to my listeners. And I do know I want to encourage them to get the book. Where can they find your book, The Lion's Lifestyle, The Seven Hardest and Easiest Steps to a Healthy Body?
Yes, it can be found on Amazon.com. It can be found at Barnes & Noble. It can also be found at Westbow Press. And we have ebooks as well as hardback and paperback books. I also have a free website that I encourage patients to go to send me specific questions. I don't make money doing it. I just want them to be able to fix their bodies. And it sounds like you
Wonderful.
Do too, and it's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Yes, and that website looks like it's lionsmedicalnews.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, fantastic. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I've learned more about fructose. I'm sure my listeners have as well. It's summer. We're going to try to stick to this 8 to 10 grams of fructose a day. Watching our honey, our table sugar, fruit,
well, the key
fruit
is
juices.
At the end of the fruit season, just shut it off if you turned it on.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much. This has been fun, and I look forward to getting your book and learning even more. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Taz, thank you for the time.
You're welcome. Take care.